Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Let's get fucking right to it, because I want to talk about this.
Let's dive into this beast.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
And I am Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Parasite, a film you probably can't see.
It's killing it. It's like it's only in a couple hundred theaters, but it keeps having like record weekends.
Uh-huh. Yeah. At the start of this, I don't know if we can do it. I don't know if we can not talk about spoilers.
Right up top, if you're planning on watching Parasite, if you've heard of the movie, it's kind of an obscure movie, but we really wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, if you're planning on watching it, don't listen to this.
Don't listen to this.
If you don't know what it is, maybe find out first.
I don't know. I'd heard from a lot of people, the less you know about this movie, the better it is.
Oh,
and I can
just
totally
mean,
see that.
Watch like the teaser. Mm-hmm. Meaning that, like, I don't want to spoil the movie even if you don't realize that you want to see the movie, because this is probably going to be an Oscar contender.
It's almost definitely going to win Best Foreign Film.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. So I guess at the top of this, just be warned. It kind of sucks because it's not playing in a lot of places yet. If you live in a big city, you can probably have access to it, or like a nice part of America that has like a good indie theater or something like that. This is worth. Well, I guess let's get into the how did you like Parasite, Tom?
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think this movie is worth driving like an hour to go see.
It's very good. It's from what's his name? Bong Joon-ho, who is the director of Snowpiercer, The Host, Okja.
Yeah. It's nothing like those movies.
Not really. It has a not really.
The humor is a little like those movies in that he likes absurd humor. But the humor in this, it's the situations are absurd, but it's still a very human movie, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's not as outlandish as The Host or Snowpiercer or Okja. It very much takes place in our world, which is different than all of those movies. In short, all right. I feel weird about spoiling this movie, but we're obviously here to talk about it.
We have to. So we've said it up front. If you're going to watch this movie, if you have any interest in it at all, press stop.
There.
Whatever device you're listening to, throw it across the room.
Throw it away. Burn it. Get a new one.
Bury it in a time capsule out back to be dug up only once you've seen the film.
Yeah, or dug up by Nicolas Cage's daughter and predict the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Spoilers for Wanted, I guess. Or not Wanted. Knowing. Sorry, I spoiled Knowing. This is about a very lower class, a poor family. Who
a family of fucking grifters.
A family of grifters, yes.
It is so... Like
it's delightful. For
like I was like an hour and a half into the movie, I was just like, man, I fucking love these people.
Yes.
Just such grifters.
Well, they basically see an opportunity. One of the friends of the son, mm-hmm. who's like a college boy, is tutoring a girl for a rich family, tutoring English, and he's like, hey man, I'm going away for like the summer. Can you fill in for me? I don't trust anybody else. I'd like you to do it. And so the son goes, and the son doesn't know shit. So he forges a certificate.
His sister does.
His sister does. Yeah, his sister's great.
Yeah, his sister's the shit.
So what proceeds to happen is they go to this house full of like very rich people who are not dumb, but just very trusting. And yeah, one by one, oh, sorry.
The mom's clearly under a lot of, I don't know. They're not dumb, but it's just, they're pretty gullible.
Yeah, they say it later where it's like, I'd be that nice too if I were rich. I'd be even nicer.
Yeah. I like at one point the dad's like, I mean, we're good at actors and all, but this is more than just acting, right? Like, these people are kind of dumb.
Yeah, exactly. And so what happens is the son, he finds out that the son of the rich family needs an art tutor, like an art psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And so he recommends his sister, pretends it's a friend of his cousin. And one by one, the plot at first is that this family begins to assume fake identities to take on servant positions
in this house.
Yeah. And they one by one take out the old servants, not in any violent way. Well, mostly.
No.
Not at first.
They get the driver fired so the dad can come in as the driver. And then they get the housekeeper fired by, she has a peach allergy. So they like keep sprinkling peach fuzz on her and trick the madam, the woman of the house, into thinking that she has tuberculosis. Yeah.
I read an interview with the director, and apparently that's based off of a friend he had in camp where it was allergic to peaches, and someone tossed a peach just near them, and they had an attack. And it was like that realization, like, holy shit, like, peaches can kill this person.
Yeah.
And they do this great grift where they each take turns suggesting it to like, they're able to talk to different members of this rich family so that it doesn't all come back to them, where it's like, oh, we'll keep this between us. It's always like an embarrassing, they don't want to make a scene or an issue of it.
Yeah.
They're very quiet, and it's like each of the poor family members taking turns kind of suggesting people and finding fun, like, good ways not to force it with the mom, who's the final one, with the housekeeper. The driver, which is the husband, the dad, suggests a agency that they have forged. So then they call the agency on their own, and they pretend to be the agency, and then they send the mom. So it's, the first half is like kind of a fun grift comedy.
It's almost a farce for the first half.
And you're like, what they're doing is wrong.
Right, they're bad.
Desperate. And that's the idea, is that the first shot or the first scene of the movie is the husband getting up and eating a piece of bread for breakfast. Like, they're that poor. Like, they live in a basement in this alleyway, and they're folding pizza boxes to get by.
For money, yeah.
Yeah. And so you get it. Like, you get that these people, why they're this desperate, why they're... don't regard these rich people as particularly great people. They don't care. And they're not really hurting anybody. They're just trying to get ahead by grifting.
Well,
not yet. Not yet. I'm setting it up. Not,
I mean, the sister is pretending to be an art therapist for this kid who clearly needs it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They got two people fired.
Yeah.
Like, there's one moment where the dad's like, where they're all, the family goes away for a camping trip. And this is when shit starts to get real.
Yeah.
But there's a moment where they're all just drinking in the rich right. people's house. And the dad's like, that driver probably got another job, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. He's like, he's young. He's in good shape. I'm sure he got another job.
Well, they also, and then they say, why are you worrying about him?
Yeah.
Worry about us. And that goes into the theme of the movie that we're getting to, because there's a lot here, because they're not heroic, they're not our hero, like, we're not on their side. It's more that we're sympathetic. We understand, because they're very poor and desperate, and they're kind of screwing people over to get into a better place,
and it's sort of like an Ocean's 11 like,
yeah, they're very smart about it.
Yeah, they're like pretty entertainingly good at it.
Yeah, at first the daughter leaves her underwear in the driver's car, and so then the head of the rich household, he finds the underwear, and they assume the driver has been up to something.
Been stupping ladies in the car.
Yeah, so they like quietly fire him, and then he recommends the wife for the housekeeper, who they convince has tuberculosis. And the fact that they're screwing over the other people play into it, because then what happens is the family goes camping. And they celebrate by drinking in the house, which you know right away, like, oh, this is a mistake.
This isn't going to end well. Yeah, you don't do that.
Yes, yes and no, because, again, I've known very poor people where it's like if you get a break, where it's like this is a nice house that we technically have for the weekend, it's like they just wanted a fucking taste of a nice night, you know?
Yes.
But, again, it's a poor choice. It's a very bad idea.
Yeah, not a good decision.
And then the old housemaid rings the doorbell.
Yep.
And this is where shit gets great.
This is, this is where this takes an unexpected turn.
Yeah, and she doesn't look great, and she says, like, I forgot something when I left. It's in the basement. Can I go get it? And they let her in, and they, like, the new housemaid, the wife, she hides the fact that the family's there. And so she lets her into the basement, and she starts moving a shelf and asks for help, like, desperate. It's a great scene when she pushes it and the woman falls flat on her face.
Yeah.
And there it turns out to be a secret bunker under the house that's been there forever. And they establish this already as the housemaid was there before the previous owners. Like, she's been in this house longer than the new rich family.
Right. She was the housekeeper for the architect that built the house.
Yes. And so the reveal is that there's a secret bunker that the family, new family, didn't know about that she's been keeping her husband in, because her husband is so in debt that he's basically wanted by loan sharks. And he's just been living down there like a parasite.
Yeah.
And then the old housekeeper learns that the family is grifters. Basically, she films them. And so starts blackmailing them, and it becomes this battle between those two, and it gets real violent. And the family comes home early, and that's, man, that sequence.
Sequence is pretty great.
Yeah, basically it becomes violent, and they tie up the housekeeper and her husband, and the housekeeper in the process falls down the stairs, the old housekeeper. Well, she gets shoved down the stairs by the mom.
The mom, like, very surreptitiously elbows her right when she's about to come out of the stairwell. It's great.
It's a solid elbow, yeah. And she goes tumbling down and slams her head against the concrete and the peaches, and then she dies later.
Yeah, she has a concussion and dies. We should point out, it's important to note that when we meet the husband, he is clearly off.
Yeah, the husband has been in the basement using the breakers or the lights to send Morse code messages to the rich head of the household, the father, thanking him for everything he's given him, screaming respect.
Yeah. Yeah, he is unwell. Like, and there, that scene where, like, she reveals that, like the mom said,
the ghost.
The ghost.
This
is creepy as shit.
That made me think, like, oh, he needs to make a serious horror movie at some point.
Yeah, that was a pretty good shot. But yeah, it's the kid, the little boy of the rich family is also kind of has developmental problems. Like, he's kind of in his own world. And it's because he had this great traumatic event when he was in first grade. He saw a ghost. And when we see the flashback, we realize that it was the old housekeeper's husband coming up from the basement.
And the shot is, to eat. I can't describe this shot.
It's fucking great.
What it is it's basically a shot looking at the door to the basement. And so it's an empty stairwell. And then just from the bottom, the top of a head peeks up with the craziest, most intense fucking stare.
Yeah.
Of this guy.
This man is wild eyed. Like, he's
been down there for 4 years, over four years, they say.
He's beyond the precipice of madness. Like, he's a very deranged person.
And so they eventually, they have to stay there for most of the night because the family got back early.
Yeah, this is...
And they spend the majority of the night hiding under the coffee table with the family in the living room.
Right. Like, and they fucking bone on the couch.
They bone on the couch, yes.
Well, the dad and son and daughter are hiding under the coffee table.
Yep, it is.
Because their shitty kid wants to camp outside, so they have to sleep in the living room.
Yeah, and they just have to, like, once they're asleep, they, like, slide slowly across the floor. Yeah,
it's, like, this part of this movie is farcical. Like,
yeah.
It's
Oh yeah. No, this is, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, this movie is wild.
And so what this comes to is they go home, they find out that their house was flooded. It's kind of the third act. I'm skipping through this because there's a lot of things I want to talk about with what it symbolizes.
Shit's like exploding out of the toilet. Like their house, their entire neighborhood and their house as well, they live in a kind of a semi-basement, is flooded with sewage.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that means something.
Oh, I can. Well, we'll talk about it right now. Is that whole sequence is? It's they're in the basement. They're taking. Yeah. They're accepting the runoff of this rich society that's clogging them. Yeah. And you hear the rich people being like, "Oh, it was great. We had a good rain last night." And like the house, the rich house, their house is on a slope, and so it's all about.
So it all just runs down.
It's
all
running down. In that whole sequence where they go home, they're going exclusively downstairs. It's them going down and down and down and down into the sewers of the.
Yeah. And like the son stops on the steps for a minute, and dad's like, "What are you doing? Let's go." And he looks down, and it's just the water spilling down into their world around his feet.
It's one of the shots is when they first leave the house. It goes down. Really, it pans down to a drain pipe, and the water spilling down. And that goes into the dad's arc. Which what happens is after that they get invited to the birthday party of the young son, and they go to try to help. Or at least deal with the people they have locked in the basement?
Well, it's... You get the... Like, the kids... The son's trying to figure out what to do. The dad said he's got a plan, but then says that the only plan I have is no plan because life doesn't work out when you make plans.
Right.
So the mom and the daughter want to go down and help the people.
Right.
Like, they're like, we should come to an agreement with them. Like, the daughter gets a plate of food. She's about to go down. And then the rich mom shows up, so they're not able to do it. And while they're doing that, the son goes down to kill them.
Yes.
He has a big rock.
Right. The movie begins with them getting this rock, and it's supposed to symbolize wealth. And I looked up this rock. It's something... It's not cultural to Korea. It's cultural to, like, old people in Korea. Like, it's not a regular thing. It's weird. It's like the old person collecting dolls kind of thing. So...
Right, it's specifically supposed to bring them wealth, right?
Yeah, and it becomes a cursed object.
Yes, it does.
Basically, he brings the rock down, and the rock betrays him by tumbling down the stairs out of his hands.
Yep.
And then he goes down there, and he is accosted by the man. The woman, the old housekeeper, has died at this point.
Yeah.
So he's completely off his rocker, and he basically chases him upstairs and uses the rock to... bash the son's head.
Yeah, he appears dead.
Yes,
although he is not.
Yes.
It's also telling that the son, he can't, like, every time we see him in the movie try to lift the rock, he can't. It's like too heavy for him, and I'm sure that's symbolic.
Oh, for sure.
And then because like you said, ultimately the rock, which is supposed to mean wealth, betrays him and gets him terribly injured.
Yeah,
which is kind of what tasting wealth did to him.
Yeah, for sure.
And he couldn't hold on to it.
He couldn't hold on to it. And skipping ahead, he eventually lets the rock go.
He does,
But the basement husband has escaped, and he walks out into the birthday party and stabs the sister, the poor family's daughter.
Yeah.
And
who was like my favorite character?
She's
her and the
so
dad.
Good. I think that's why they knew to kill her, because it was like,
yeah,
fuck.
We got to care. Actually, I loved all of them, man.
Yeah, they're great.
The whole family was great. Like the fucking mom.
Yeah.
Like just runs over and fucking
terrific,
beasts that guy.
She's so good. Also, the housekeeper when she does the North Korea news anchor impression. Holy shit! She apparently is the voice of Okja. In Okja.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which wasn't a big part. It's just snorting. It's just...
The dad's in a lot of...
Yeah.
Like, he was in The Host and Snowpiercer as well.
Yeah.
The poor dad. The Kim
family and the Park family.
And the Park family is the rich family, yeah.
And so, the father, the Kim father...
Yeah.
He, is over the daughter. Meanwhile, the Park son has his seizures that he's the problem that he's been having because he sees the ghost again. And they're like, we need to take him to the hospital. And Mr. Kim is too concerned with his own daughter, and they're like, toss
right,
us
the
keys.
She's bleeding to death.
Yeah.
And nobody is helping.
Nobody's
her.
Helping. And the kid who's having a seizure isn't, I would argue,
he's not in danger.
He's not in danger.
Like, I mean, seizures are bad, but they're not.
Exactly. There's
he's not
going
to die.
And then the guy from the basement gets skewered, literally.
Yep.
By the mother,
but
Mrs. Kim.
The mom fucking stabs him through the torso with a kebab.
Right. And this was something we haven't talked about, but like up until this point, Mr. Kim, the driver, overheard when he's under the coffee table when the park.
That he stinks.
That he stinks. And he just was in sewer the night before. So what he looks over and sees, he tosses the keys to Mr. Park, who's not helping his daughter. It accidentally goes under the basement guy who's dying, and Mr. Park walks up to the guy, rolls him over to get the keys, and holds his nose when he does it.
Yep.
And Mr. Kim gets up and stabs Mr. Park.
Stabs him straight to death. Yep. Right in the chest. In front of his shitty kid.
Yep. And then he gets the fuck out of there.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
As you do.
That scene was such...
Oh.
God damn it, this movie is good.
So good.
So, the rest of the plot is the dad disappears, the sister dies, the son and the mom get probation for, like, forgery and fraud,
right.
Basically.
Self-defense, he mentions that they were able to get self-defense.
Oh, yeah, look, his mom was being attacked by this crazy right. person who just murdered her daughter, yeah. So yeah. But he's got a brain injury that he laughs uncontrollably sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he's laughing when he's at his they're looking at their sister's grave.
He is now the Joker.
Yeah, he's now Joker.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's supposed to last, because it doesn't last beyond that scene.
No. It doesn't last too long.
He goes to spy on the house, and it's owned by a new German family. And then he sees the lights flashing in Morse code and realizes that his dad has been hiding in the bunker.
Yeah, instead of leaving, he basically went out and around the house and just back
yep.
in and into the basement that no one knew about. The only people who knew about it are dead.
Yep.
And it ends with him kind of vowing to his dad that he's just going to make enough money in his life to buy the house back so his dad can get out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the film. And good God.
Yeah.
It's...
Man, there's a lot.
There's a lot. There's a lot. There's the dynamics of what it's saying about... Yeah. Not just... See, what I found interesting is it's definitely talking about rich versus poor, but mm-hmm. they don't portray the rich people as particularly evil. And it's actually more about poor people versus poor people. Because it's this idea of like the dad not feeling rejected, like what leads to him. I saw there's a lot of debate of what led to him stab Mr. Park.
It's all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's the fact that he doesn't regard them as people, and it becomes like
yeah.
the smell thing is just kind of like, oh, that sucks.
Right. It's also,
that's a shitty thing to hear.
Someone noted, pointed out online that when they find the basement dwelling husband, he mentions that he had a cake shop that went out of business. And they mentioned mm-hmm. that the Kim family also had a cake shop that went out of business. So
yeah.
what he's seeing, and the part where they say loan sharks, and they're like, they say something like, we're needy, and we're needy, and they're like, I'm not needy, you're needy. And that mm-hmm. idea that they're seeing a version of what they fear they will become.
Yes.
The father, for sure, is that he's seeing, like, they judge them for doing loan sharks when they're not that far from
desperation. They're not that far off. They're just like one step away from being completely craven.
Right. And the dad has this, like, the pizza box thing where they're all folding pizza boxes at the beginning, and they only get a fraction of what they're owed because they're like 1/4 of the pizza boxes were done
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, they fucked up a bunch of them.
And they look at the father, and it's the idea
yeah.
that this father is just, he's trying to provide for his family and has sort of failed, and his kids step in.
Yeah, and it's, we also, like, in that opening scene, he's watching, like, the tutorial on YouTube of this woman who's folding boxes.
Right.
So he's like, oh, okay, this is, like he was trying to, like, direct them and into getting some money into the house, and he fucked it up.
Yeah, and so it's a lot, it's that, it's him, like, wanting to be, because the Mr. Park accuses him. That's the other thing that I think is actually a bigger deal than the smell. One of the other things he overhears is that Mr. Park says he almost crosses the line a lot.
And yeah, I don't ever understand what he's talking about.
It's because he doesn't like being like he's talking to him like an equal, is what he's saying.
That's true.
And that's what it is that the last conversation they have too is them behind.
Yeah.
And he does it again, like, think of it like a job. We're not equals. You're getting paid for this.
You're getting paid extra.
And it's this rejection. He doesn't want to be seen as lesser than these people, but they treat him that way no matter what. He smells. He's the smelly kid. It's that.
The birthday party is just so perfectly illustrates that. What his daughter is bleeding to death, has been stabbed in the chest, and all of these rich people are just crowding around this their precious little boy who's gonna be fine.
Right.
I mean, it's scary when people have seizures. I know it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, like,
but
again, they do it in a way where it's like the Park family, I get it. I get why they're concerned for their son in that moment.
But it's the fact that they're not concerned at all. Like, they say, like, call an ambulance. There's no time for an ambulance. Call an ambulance for the person who just got stabbed.
Yeah, exactly. They do not
and
give
then,
a
like,
shit.
And then, like, when he rolls the guy over who's been stabbed, holding his nose and grabbing the keys, it's like, oh, we're subhuman. Like, my daughter's dying and we're subhumans to you. You don't care.
Yeah, and that's the last straw, and it
so I'm going to stab your ass. It's not heroic, but I get it.
Yeah, and again, the person, yeah, there's so much. Then the husband who's, again, they met a family who lives in a literal basement with the sucking off from basically the wealth of this family, which is essentially what they've been doing, just accepting the runoff of the rich their whole life. And this guy
their basement is just further away.
And this guy is groveling he's yelling respect at the guy who's rolling him over and doesn't care about him.
Has no idea he even exists.
And at that moment, Mr. Kim knows, like, we're this. It's the same. I'm the same.
Yeah.
It's him. It's them trying to deny that fact, mm-hmm. And accepting sort of the idea of, like, yeah, this guy doesn't see me any different than this other guy.
Hence the name Parasite. And like a parasite, it kills its host.
Yeah, it sure does. What a great film. It's just, because it's all that, but it's an extremely entertaining movie about a family of grifters that you like.
Yeah, it's very good. Just, it's a fun, enjoyable film, and then also it has these layers.
Yeah, which I think from the trailer, you sort of suspect that.
It's you could definitely get a sense that, oh, this is like, this movie's going to be about graspers.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what the end says, because they do this thing at the end, and I was really happy because they faked me out at the end, because the son is writing the letter and he says, I'm going to make money and I'm going to buy the house, and then they show it happening, and I thought, like, oh shit, they're not going to end like this, right? And they kind of fake you out, is that you think that's what's happening. They show him as an adult buying the house and the father coming out and them hugging. And then it cuts back to him in the basement apartment.
Oh, it doesn't cut.
Or no, it fades out. You're right.
No. The shot lowers.
Oh, shit. You're right.
The shot lowers into the same shot that we saw in the beginning of their basement apartment, except now it's dark and he's sitting there reading the letter he just wrote.
Yeah.
So it literally descends down from the rich house into the basement.
And I think this is what I'm wondering with the wealth rock is, I think part of the message of this film, and it's actually a very conservative message, is that you can't just trick or luck your way into wealth. You have to work for it. Seems to be the implication there.
That's part of it. I think it's more about what money does to people.
Yeah, that too. Also, there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, things require work and not just random luck or grifting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah. That
but
obviously,
it's also, you can work your whole life.
No grift lasts forever.
Yeah.
And also, like, they don't start out as grifters. Like, they're all...
No, they just slowly become grifters.
There are people who have worked really hard and they just can't...
Yep.
You know, they've been working their whole lives and they just can't get a break, and then they find this inn.
In a way, they end up back where they started for that reason.
They're lesser than.
Yeah, they're lesser
families
than.
Their family's destroyed. Like, dad's in hiding probably forever. Sister's dead.
Yeah.
Son's got brain injury. And
it's a very personal message because it's basically saying, like, it's not being like, hey, let's eat the rich. Or, like, it doesn't get political, I guess.
Not really.
It's just, like, because it ends with him being like, what the fuck are you going to do? I'm just going to keep working and try to get money. For this hope. Mm-hmm. And it's not,
and in a way, oh, go ahead.
Oh, it's not like, it just sort of ends there, but it's like, obviously there's a problem with the society.
Yes.
But they're not really addressing it. It's just evident from the movie. They don't need to address it. Mm-mm. You know, it's not preachy in that regard.
Also, it's not clear. He does get rid of the burden of that rock, but he's still daydreaming about,
yeah,
if as soon as I get enough money, it'll solve all our problems.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is they're back to where they started. It's uh-huh. The movie very rightfully doesn't try to tell us that money can't buy happiness. Like it's just
very evident.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just like, yeah, it objectively sucks to be this poor. And it's awful, and I don't know. It's it's a hell of a message, because again, it's not a negative message. It's more complex than I thought it was going to be, in that they don't portray the rich people as complete villains. They mean well. They just don't know any better. They live in a bubble. And they don't realize, yeah, they don't even think about these other people. It is, they are in villains for that reason, but they aren't, you know, sinister.
The dad, Mr. Park, is definitely worse than Mrs. Park.
Oh, for sure.
Like, she's perfectly nice, and she seems like she is interested in these, like, she cares about her kids. She right. seems to be interested in their lives somewhat.
Right.
But the dad's super.
But at the end of the day, it's just employees in their house.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And the dad doesn't seem to love the mother. Like, mm-hmm. She's clearly like a trophy wife. He works at like some cool VR tech company.
Yeah. He's like a tech. He's a tech billionaire. He's got like, there's newspaper clippings and shit of him all over the house.
Right.
Like, he's a big deal.
And so, yeah. It's man. What a fucking movie. And the performances.
What a fucking movie. They're so good. The Kim family fucking rules. I love every single one of them.
Oh, yeah. And they did great with the housekeeper was, I think the housekeeper is the MVP for me. Because she spends most of the movie, I just thought of her as a side character that wasn't going to be anything.
Oh, yeah.
And then the moment she gets power, because that's another part of it, is their attitudes change depending on the power dynamic.
Yes.
Like when they're in the basement and they find out that she's keeping her husband down there, she's saying, oh, sis, please help us. And she's like, I'm not your sis, the Kim mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this dynamic of like begging you. And then the reveal that the Kim family are grifters, that the housekeeper finds out and she films it. Suddenly she's like, oh, the Kim mother is like, sis, please. She's like, I'm not your fucking sis.
Yep.
And they bring them upstairs and they make them stand there with their hands up while they enjoy.
They're kneeling. They're kneeling with their hands up.
Right, right. While they enjoy the house, which again, it's that thing of like they talk about how they also would go up into the house when people weren't there and enjoy the house.
Right, but they were like talking shit on them. It's like, oh, you guys think it do is get drunk. We actually enjoyed the house. And it's like, no, you just did your own thing.
Right, but again, it's like. It's the like we're not like
you don't appreciate this. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's poor people fighting amongst each other while the rich continue to be rich.
The rich continue to not even really know they exist.
Yes, yeah. But I love the part where she's doing the impression of the North Korean
of Kim Jong Un. I think
no, she's doing the impression of the. You've never watched the North Korean like propaganda?
Yeah.
I think she's.
But she was,
what's that?
She's talking about like it was like our great leader Kim Jong Un has taken the last nuke to shoot it at this family.
But I love that she does that and then like kind of turns to them and goes, "Get your fucking hands back up!" Like this really like her performance was so good. There's again, they're all fantastic. I guess
they're all great. Yeah.
A lot of them were from theater. I looked it up. Obviously, the main Kim who's in Snowpiercer and stuff.
Yeah, he'd been in a couple of this Bong Joon-soon.
Yeah.
Or Ho. Bong Joon-ho. That's his name.
It's...
Yeah, he'd been in some of his previous movies.
I think this movie blows his other films out of the water.
I've always liked his film.
Me too.
But this, yeah, you're right. This one might be my favorite.
Well, here's the thing is that I've only seen Okja and Snowpiercer. I never saw The Host, and I need to. Mm-hmm. But Snowpiercer is essentially the same dynamic of class war, but it's done in such a blatant fantasy way.
It's fantastical and over the top.
Yeah, and it's more like a fighting film.
Yeah. That's an action movie.
That it's fun to watch, but it felt superficial, I guess is the word. It felt like
it's just louder.
It's louder, more style.
It's louder about it. It's less style.
He's been a great, less subtle. Yeah, he's been a great director forever. And Okja, again, a really fucking great message on meat, eating meat and all that, and solid fucking Jake Gyllenhaal in that.
Fucking Gyllenhaal's out of his mind in that movie.
Yeah, but this is his first movie that felt like a real drama, like a more grounded human film. For that reason, is that there's nothing wrong with fantasy, but I always go back to a movie like my brain, Drumming.
Whiplash.
Whiplash. Thank you. I kept thinking about the movie Drumline, which is not the same movie.
That's a different movie.
Whiplash is such a good movie, and it's just about a kid and his teacher having a fucking, my brain, I think I'm having a stroke.
Are you all right? Are you stroking out?
I don't think I'm stroking out.
Did a crazy dude appear from a
rivalry.
Secret basement?
I was thinking of the word rivalry. God damn it. No, there's no crazy dude. But it's a very simple thing that's done in a very dramatic way. And this is not that as simple, but it's just a lot more human.
That actor, man, had some of the best crazy eyes.
It's so good. I can see it. I can see the shot in my mind's eye right now.
Yeah, it is frozen in there. Yeah. This guy and the leader of the machete gang in the raid have some awesome crazy eyes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. God damn. Yeah, go see this movie. I can't believe you've listened to this whole podcast having not seen the movie, person listening.
Right. What the hell is your problem?
Yeah, what the fuck? It is a fantastic movie. It's definitely... I mean, how could it not win Best Foreign Movie? It should be a contender for more awards than that.
I think it might get nominated for both because Roma was.
That's true. Where does this rank for this year for you?
In terms of every movie that I've seen?
Yeah, like your favorite movie of the year.
I mean, this is definitely top 10, probably top 5.
Yeah, I think this is top 5. It might be top 3. I have to obviously sit down and think about this, but...
I'd have to think, yeah, this year has been a goddamn blur.
Yeah, I've already watched this film twice because it was a thing where it's like, oh, I know there's so much in it that I'm missing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much this... It's meant to mean or how much this matters, but it's clear like the daughter that the son is coming into tutor also had a crush on his friend because his friend's like, no, I have a crush on her. As soon as she reaches university, I'll ask her out for real. I just want you to, fill in for me because I can trust you. And then he goes in and immediately starts up a thing with her.
Oh yeah. And they're planning like a grifter wedding. And that there's something too.
He says the same thing. It's like as soon as she gets to university, I'll ask her out. And she's a high school sophomore,
right?
And he's in his fucking 20s.
It's a weird thing where they both seem like they're almost fetishizing each other in this weird way. Where I think to her it's like rebellion because they set her up as being kind of a rebellious teen.
Yeah, and he's low class.
And then he has that realization like, do I belong here? She cares about him enough to drag his body out.
She does carry him out.
She lifts him like a sack of potatoes.
She does. And that's like...
Because again, I don't think it's... She realizes it's superficial. Like, she's young enough to actually give a shit.
Right.
But...
And when you're that young, you think crushes are like going to last forever and are like the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, but she's still like a different species in a way.
Kinda. Yeah.
When he hides under her bed... Oh, man.
He does hide under her bed.
Well, yeah, when they're trying to get out of the house, they have to hide in different locations, and they all kind of meet up, and then they have to hide again. That was real good, because when you hear they're all getting drunk and you hear the doorbell and it's like, ah, here we go. And then yep. The reveal is nuts and you're like, okay, so this is what was going to be the great consequence of this. And then they get a phone call and they're like, hi, we're 8 minutes away.
8 minutes away. We want you to make ramen for our shitty kids.
Yep. It's Ramdan, which I looked that up and I guess it's a translation thing. It was a meal that they couldn't quite translate.
And then Mr. Park later just calls it ramen. He says, stop fighting about ramen.
Right.
So it's just noodles and meat.
Yeah. And I love that you have 8 minutes and she hangs up the phone and goes, how the fuck do you make ramen?
Oh, she says, I think she says, what the fuck is right. Ramdan?
Yeah. I was looking at the subtitles. He has, I guess, two people do them. A person who is from Korea who spent a lot of time in America and someone from America who spent a lot of time in Korea. And it's like, that's a good way of doing it. It's like they meet.
That's a good way to do it. Cause you catch colloquialisms that way.
Yeah. And like certain things like WhatsApp, they mention in it. It wasn't WhatsApp. It's not, they're saying it's a Korean equivalent. The stuff like that. There wasn't that much difference, I guess. And he was concerned cause he was like, this is very much about class in Korea and will this translate? It's, and it's like, fuck,
it's
yeah,
universal,
will.
Man. Yeah. it's pretty universal, man.
Yeah, there's little things like when the housekeeper gets fired for tuberculosis, there's a shot that doesn't, watching it a second time, doesn't mean much. It's her leaving and she's walking out and she looks really sad and then she stops and like looks behind her and then like looks nervous and keeps walking. It's like, oh, she remembered her husband.
Yeah, her fucking husband's in the basement, hiding from loan sharks.
Hiding from loan sharks. This is definitely worth watching more than once for this reason.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of little things in the performances, like when they walk by the basements and shit from then on. Like at the beginning, when you know there's a door there, it changes things.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, man, Parasite.
Such a good fucking movie.
Yep.
I love that after he bashes the son's head in with the rock, Crazy Man stops and drinks an entire jar of like plum extract and then throws it on the ground.
Which they set up. They set up earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he bashes him with the rock again. It's a real.
Hits him with the rock again.
It's a real There Will Be Blood moment, which they reverse in this because in There Will Be Blood, it's like, oh, is he dead? And then he bashes him a few more times like, oh, yeah, he's dead. Yeah, no question. Yep. And it's that again where it's like, man, is the son dead? And then he throws the rock down again. It's like, yeah, probably. But
yeah, he's probably dead.
But he isn't. He makes it.
He's not dead, yeah.
The only, really, the only part that I didn't... I mean, I loved this movie, but the only part that didn't feel like it needed to be in it is the laughing.
Yeah, that was weird.
Didn't really need it. And it was a little sweaty with the Cub Scout Morse code stuff, but... In the end, that was fine. I had no problem with that.
Right, because it winds up not like
it. It's sweaty in
that
the,
doesn't that doesn't pay off with like when it shows the kid outside in his tent doing Morse translating the Morse code. That doesn't pay off.
No, it doesn't. It was weird because they established that he's into Cub Scouts early, and I remember they spent a little too much time on it, and I was like, "That's going to be a thing later." Like, that has to be a thing later. They set it up very obviously. And then it is a thing not for the reasons you think, because Morse code is just, you know, it makes sense, right, but you're not thinking about it.
It was like the movie's way of introducing it, and it turns out not to even really matter.
No.
Because, like, the dad says in his letter, he's like, I know you used to be in Boy Scouts, so this is a long... And, oh, they do set up that the son was in Boy Scouts, too.
Right, and they do it where he can't read it. He just recognizes it.
He recognizes that it's Morse code.
And then he looks it up later.
I don't even think you need that. I think most adults, if they saw consistent flashing like that, would be like, oh, that's Morse code.
Yeah, I think so,
right?
Too.
Right? Isn't that fairly... I mean, most people don't know Morse code,
yeah,
but I think a lot of people would
Morse
recognize
code,
the... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably the only part that was like, yeah, you could have probably trimmed that. He wrote this, by the way, all outside in coffee shops in Vancouver and Korea, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I guess that's how he writes. He just goes like coffee shop to coffee shop, spends like 10 minutes writing, goes to the next coffee shop, just to keep himself on his feet. But he like
that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
No, it's not. Actually, it took him like a few months, like 3 months or something, to write this. And damn, goddamn.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah, it's real good.
This fucking movie, you guys.
This fucking movie.
This goddamned movie.
It has everything. It has class war. It has violence. Not too much violence. Like my parents could watch this. Like it's that level where it's like, yeah, there's a few shots you'll flinch or look away.
Yeah, it doesn't go over the top.
No.
I mean, the guy gets stabbed with a meat kebab.
Yeah.
It's
your standard. It's violence that could be seen on TV, on like cable TV or network TV even.
Also, I just realized that the last time we see Crazy Man is he's lying dead on the grass with a meat kebab skewered through his torso with a huge smile on his face, and the dog is eating the meat off of it.
Oh, yeah.
So the dog is literally eating table scraps.
You're right. Also...
which is what he was doing.
Yes. Yes. Also, the dogs have a great time in this whole movie. There's three dogs. My favorite part is, again, we talked about at the top of this, where she's talking about how they're nice, and she's like, shit, I could be nice if I had that money. I'd be even more nice. And the dog approaches her, and she shoves it away. And it just sort of skids on the floor and wanders off. And the dogs spend a lot of the movie just being like, what are these people up to? Like, they're just observing the whole thing go down.
Yep, quiet. They're like the watcher.
Yeah. They're just having a great time. They're like, I don't know what any of this is, but I think they're playing a game. When the son's hiding under the bed, the dog goes under the bed to see him, and it's all happy.
Yeah. Just staring at him.
Dumb. Like, they're like the little inbred dogs, like the real shitty little dogs.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. The dogs are having a blast in this.
Yes.
And then they were probably at that party begging for scraps, and then the guy gets stabbed, and they're like, ooh, kebab.
Yeah. This is the dogs now.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking, oh, great film. Great film.
Man, so good.
Any final thoughts?
No, other than watch this goddamn
movie. Yeah, watch this goddamn movie. It's fantastic. It's one of the best movies of the year.
I'm
sorry that it's not playing everywhere. It'll get around, especially when it gets nominated.
And I'm sure it'll hit streaming.
Yeah, it'll be on streaming pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. It'll be on streaming before awards season.
Oh, by the way, you know what else is on streaming now? The Pool. We talked about it in Hypecast. Alligator film. So, I don't know. I haven't watched it. I can't vouch for it yet.
The Art of Self-Defenses as well.
Damn, a lot. God, and Wounds.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of shit streaming. And Wounds, gotta watch it. Wounds. So much, you guys. So many films
so
to
much.
Watch.
Or you can go to the theaters and watch The Current Wars. That's what's out. That's what came out this weekend.
The Current Wars Director's Cut.
Yep. Also, or Countdown, the one about the killer app that has a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. Black and Blue, which I legitimately want to see. That's the one about the the cops.
The cop who witnesses other cops kill an informant.
Yep. Or The Lighthouse, which I bet is fucking great. But same problem with The Lighthouse.
The Lighthouse. It's not playing anywhere. Yep.
We're sort of, when it comes to movies, we're on the top of the hill, and you get our runoff.
Yeah, you guys get our shit water.
We watch the movies and then we shit them out on you.
Yeah, we just belch sewage out of our assholes.
Mm-hmm. We sure
That's
do.
What this is.
Enjoy. Open your mouths. Open your mouths.
Ass belching.
Take it.
Take our ass belches.
let me tell you guys about our Patreon.
Yeah.
Now that we've said that.
Now that we've totally demeaned you.
We have a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac. Mm. They're great. We put out a free episode of Fox Mulder is a Maniac. It's out right now.
We did. Yeah, it's out right now. You can cram it in your fucking skull.
Yeah, get it in your skull. Get a taste.
Mm-hmm. We also have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed. You can get shirts and stickers and stuff. Check that out.
Check it all out. Again, eat our shit. Gamefully Unemployed, eat our shit.
Drink our shit
water. That's our new motto from now on. There's nothing you can do about it.